Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCRW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino has made it back from Boston.
Yes, I survived.
Driving a sewing machine from Boston and back. He never got run off the road.
No, it came close. There were people drag racing on the way back, and oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, but that was you in your three-cylinder sewing machine.
My little three-cylinder car.
Drag racing with everyone.
Yeah, you know. 3.5 cylinders, okay.
And they're going, oh, my God, Grandpa's is... car. Yeah, it sounds like a sewing machine going into over. You hope you didn't overheat the motor.
Yeah, I was afraid of it. Yeah.
How long are you going to keep doing that karate thing?
Oh, forever. As long as I can move.
Okay. Well, it takes you a long time to get over it, but now you're going to be laid up for a week.
Not a week. I'm basically back to normal. It took a couple of days.
A couple of days now, but...
It was more the driving than anything.
Yeah, it's tough when you're old, driving.
A couple hours in, trying to find my way. You train for a couple hours, and a couple hours back. It's almost a little bit more than
that. You used
to drive
it every day, and now you whine about it.
Yeah.
I got burnt out. You know your old when. Yeah, you know your old when. Well, now, speaking of driving, we've got returning author, and she's got another new book out, and she's going to give you the step-by-step guide, defining your path to publication. So, Judy Penn Schluck, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
How did you get into this type of a book? This is not exactly what I didn't expect this for you. So, What was it about publishing that made you do this book?
Yeah, well, my first book was published in 2015 by a traditional publisher, not one of the big fives, but a well-recognized press, mystery writer of America approved independent publisher. And then I had another book published by a publisher in British Columbia. So I had two series, two different publishers thinking, okay, if I do that, then I'll be safe, because you always hear these stories about, you know, people whose publishers have folded and then they're orphaned is the term that's used. And so I thought, well, that won't happen to me, but haha, it did. Actually, both the publishers ended up closing. The one actually in BC is still in operation, but only publishes her own titles. And she'd been in business about 14 years, but then just decided it wasn't for her anymore, I guess.
After they published your books, they both closed.
Yeah, that was it. She's like, I can't do it anymore. And then the MWA approved publisher She was terrific, but there just were a lot of family things. And so she, again, had been in business quite a long time and just shuttered her doors. I mean, I was lucky in both cases. I was, you know, got my rights back. I was paid my royalties owed and all that sort of thing. But anyway, so that happened. And then I ended up thinking, you know, I'm just going to start my own publishing imprint, which I did, Superior Shores Press. And that's worked out really well for me. And in the meantime, I've had, you know, my books picked up by Harlequin, which is a division of HarperCollins, for the mass market world. So I'm sort of with like a big five. I'm all on my own. I used to be with a traditional small press. Anyway, so I've sort of got some experience with all that. So I've learned since 2015 to today how different the publishing world has become. But what I learned was that 2022, I guess, I did a presentation for my local library on NaNoWriMo. So are you aware? Do you know what NaNoWriMo is, Al?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So a lot of people don't, but a lot of people do. So it stands for National Novel Writing Month. And the idea is that in the month of November, you write 50,000 words. So basically 1,666 words a day. And if you do that, I don't know, you get some badges and whatever. It's just mainly a way to kind of kickstart projects. I tried it, I think, three times and never gotten 50,000 words a month. I just don't write that quickly. You know, I think I'm fairly prolific. I've had like 9 books out since 2015, but I can't write 50,000 words in a month. I don't know who can, but I guess people can. Anyway, my library said, listen, if you failed at NaNoWriMo, and we're having a presentation about it, maybe you could talk about how even if you don't make it, you can still be, you know, a successful author. Ha ha. So anyway, I went to the presentation, but what I learned was that nobody really cared who wrote 50,000 words. They wanted to understand how will I get published? Like, how do I get published? Do I go to, you know, how do I get an agent? How do I go? Should I go to a small press? What happens if I want to self-publish? Like, there was so many questions, and so I answered them to the best of my ability, but I realized that there really weren't any books per se that covered everything. You might find one that covers some things, but you won't find one that sort of covered all the different paths and honestly and realistically, you know, like, let's face it, most authors aren't making Stephen King money, you know, so but people still think that you might be able to, right? So anyway, that presentation for NaNoWriMo led to the library asking if I would do a presentation on publishing paths. So I said, oh, sure, yeah, whatever, why not? So I did this PowerPoint, and gosh, they had like 100 people there. The library couldn't believe it because, you know, it's like a small town. So really, there was a huge need for it. So when I finished it, I thought, okay, well, that was fun. You know, got paid a little bit of money to do it. I'm, you know, good about that. And then I got thinking, well, you know, I'm a total pantser when it comes to writing my mysteries. Like, I have no idea who did it, why they did it, or anything. But I thought, I've got an outline. Imagine that. I've got this PowerPoint. It could be like an outline for a book. So I thought, I think I maybe there might be a need for it. So backtracking, one of the ladies that had been to the presentation and has been kind of following me along since, you know, I probably did a presentation at her library a few years back, Emily Nakef, she's an editor, and she's also an aspiring author. So I contacted her and said, what do you think of this idea? And would you be willing to be my frontline editor so that because she's my target demo, really, right? So would you be willing to every week me send you a section and you send it back in, say, 10 or 14 days, and we just keep rolling until it's done? And, you know, so she said, yeah, that sounds fantastic. I'd love to do it. Anyway, worked out a, you know, compensation package and everything good. So that's basically what we did. And she was fantastic because she's quite a bit younger than me. I think she's in her mid-30s. I have not seen my mid-30s for some time. So she comes from a different generation, and she looks at things in a different lens than I might, right? And also the fact that she's still at that wide-eyed optimistic. She's pitching her book for to agents and that sort of thing at this time, right? So she's sort of a good demographic for me. And she also was really good about sort of pointing out things to me, like terms that to me make, like, I understood because I've been in the business for a while, but she didn't understand. So you know how it is, right? Like, if you know something, you assume everybody knows it. And yet they really don't, right? So she kind of helped me not dumb it down so much, but make it more accessible. So anyway, that's how it kind of started. That's a long answer, isn't it?
Well, yeah. yeah, but so I can see how it can get started because, you know, you learn a lot when you're going through it. I know I have, and it's like every book you have published, whether it's independent or even major label or even self-published, you end up learning something usually. Anyway, absolutely. You know, there's always something you go through that you, but why decide to actually publish a book on it? Like, what was it you're hoping to get from it?
Well, I guess, you know, for me, like before I became a mystery author, I was a freelance journalist. So I don't necessarily miss that life of, you know, always looking for the next story, the next story, the next story. But I enjoyed the research and the factual writing, and I missed that a little bit. So for me, it was kind of fun to get back to those roots. You know, I did a ton of research, you know, to make sure that I had like statistics in the book, and, you know, I had to contact, make sure that those statistics could be shared, you know, get permissions, and interviewed people. So for me, it was sort of getting back to that. And also I thought in a way it was a way of sort of giving back, because I really wish when I was starting out there had been a book, something like this, that could have guided me. I mean, I definitely made mistakes. When I look back at my publishing journey, I mean, there's definitely things I would do different if I was to do them again, which of course you can. You've made the mistake. I mean, you hopefully learn from it and move on. But so in this book, I try to keep things really real, like really help people manage their expectations and what they can expect. For instance, you know, prior to coming on live, we were chatting about, you know, the big five publishers, or, you know, how they get a lot of the market. And it's absolutely true. Like the major bookstores, the 90% of their inventory comes from the big five. So why are the New York Times bestsellers, you know, mostly big five? Well, because 90% of the books sold in the bookstore are from the big five, right? So if you're looking at it at wanting to approach one of those stores as a small press or a self-published author, you've got virtually no chance. So I spell that out. Like, you know, if this is important to you, then this path isn't going to be for you, right? Because you're not going to get that. You're not going to see your book stacked in Chapters or Indigo, or it's just not going to happen if you're independently published. I mean, I guess it happens rarely, but it was so rarely it's hardly worth a mention. So I just try to keep things real, but then, you know, I also try to explain that, you know, just because you're with Big Five doesn't mean you're going to sell a lot of books. Like, one of the statistics I learned, which surprised me, was that 4 to 5 authors that are published with one of the Big Five do not earn their royalty back. 4 to 5. Like, that's crazy. So people assume like authors are making all kinds of money, but the reality is that very few are making much. You know, I think one of the Sisters in Crime survey, they were saying, you know, I think about 50% of authors made less than $1,000 in a year. Like, those are kind of sobering statistics, right? You know, there are people that are, you know, there were people interviewed that made over $100,000. So there is opportunity to earn. But I think there's a bit of a, I think a lot of people have false expectations when it comes to, you know, writing books and thinking that they're going to get rich, you know. And I would tell people, no, if you want to earn a living, then go go work at Timmy's and you'll make
that's not a living.
Make more. Well, then you will writing books, probably.
But there's a celebrity attached to being a published author. I think that is what attracts it. Because even when they're musicians and they're new and they're not making any money in the beginning stages, and even when they got a new song out or whatever, there's a lot to pay for. So, but there's a celebrity attached, and I think that's what people are thinking, you know.
And it's true. I mean, there's no question that that is part of it. And that is fun. I mean, you know, really, I know, like, say I'm golfing and I'm, you know, I golf in a league where I golf with, you know, you get your a different people every week, I mean, sometimes you'll get the same person just by happenstance, but there's like 130 people in the league. Chances are you're playing with some, you know, three different people every week. And, you know, inevitably, what do you do? And, you know, like, I'm an author. And, like, a lot of people are like, oh, that's so cool. Like, it's true. You get a little bit of, like, a bit of a shine to you. That's kind of fun.
You don't get that if you say, I work at Timmy's.
Yeah, no. It's true. Yeah, I work at Timmy's. It's true, yeah. So, in that, you know, you're right. There is that little bit of a shine, which is fun. But, anyway, and I don't know if that answered your question, but I wanted to write it. It seemed like it would be fun to write. I enjoyed the process when I was finished writing it, and Emily had finished, you know, back and forth with her. I had my regular editor read it through, and she's also been publishing for years, so she, you know, gave me some insights, and I had some beta readers. And anyway, I think overall, I think it's a really good book. I think if somebody is wanting to get published and really doesn't know which path is right for them, this book can help them. But I think it's also for, you know, there's authors that have been published like I was with a small press and then have been orphaned and they don't know what to do. Like they're completely at sea, right? So this is kind of another thing that can say, here you go. Here are your other options. Like, you know, the world doesn't end because that publisher closed. You have other options. So, you know, I hope it does some good. I hope it helps people.
Is there a chapter in there about sleeping with people to get your book published?
No, there isn't. I think when you get to my age, that's actually probably a deterrent. Like, oh, God. So, yeah, I think... Yeah, I think I'm past that point where that would really be anything that would get somebody's attention.
Well, what's the most frequent question you get about publication when you do these speaking engagements?
People want to know about royalties, like the, you know, royalties. And that was one of the things that Emily didn't understand, because I had put in, you know, when you're with a traditional publisher, you'll get an advance. I mean, those advances can range from $100 to, you know, if you're Harry, the Prince Harry, it's like probably $500,000 or whatever, but, you know, it varies anyway. And so one of the things is, well, if you don't earn out your advance, in other words, you don't sell enough books to make up that money that they paid you in advance, you don't have to pay back your advance. And she was like, well, is there like a timeline? Like, what if you don't earn it back in 3 years? I'm like, no, like that's your money, bonus free. You know, you won't get any more money. Like they're not going to pay you if you're not selling books, but you don't have to give that money back. And that's a surprise. Like a lot of people don't know that, right? They also don't understand the royalty structure. They sort of figure, okay, the book, I always give the example of say the print books, because ebooks you make a little bit more, but print, you know, like a print book that sells for like $19.99, say, which today a lot of them are even selling for more, paperbacks, $23-24. But you know, there's the cost of the paper. The bookstore has to make money. The distributor has to make money. If you have an agent, they have to make money. If you have a publisher, they have to make money. So the bottom line is on a $20 book, the author might, if they're lucky, earn $1.50. Yeah. I don't think people realize that. They assume, oh, the book's $20. I must be making 10. Well, not in your wildest dreams is that ever going to happen. You'd be lucky to make $2. Lucky. Yeah. So I don't think people realize that. And I don't think they realize how much everybody kind of takes a piece of the pie, you know, piece of your pie. So, you know, like Amazon, depending on the price of the book, Let's say it's a an ebook, a Kindle, and it sells for $10.99, so over $9.99. They take 70% of that sale before you see a penny, right? If it's under $9.99, then they'll only take 30% or 35%. So, but still, people don't really realize that these, of course, you know they're in business to make money, but somehow you don't really equate it to they're going to take my money, right? And they're take someone else's money. They're not going to take my money. So, so I don't think people really realize that, and they're always kind of awestruck by that. Like and it's just keeping it real though. Like, you know, but I always say, hey, when I see a book and the cover says, you know, a million copies sold, I say, well, even if they only made $1 a book, they're a millionaire. So, so really it's volume, right? And I don't think people really realize that either. So I guess, royalties is one of the big questions. And the other big one is like, how do I get an agent? You know, how do I get a publisher? You know, what do I do? And, so that's the other sort of big.
That's when we get into the sleeping with people chapter.
Well, I always tell people, like, you know, you have to treat it like a job application, because that's what it is. You're applying for them to buy into you, which is what an employer does, right, when they hire you. So you have to treat it that way. You have to, you know, explain why, you know, why your book is the right fit. Why are you the right fit? Because it's not even sometimes just about your book. It's also, you know, what they think that you will do as an author to promote it. I mean, the days of authors being sent all over the place on these book tours to all these different, you know, I'm sure people like Louise Penny, it still happens to, or, you know, but the average author, no, you know, you're expected to do, you know, most of the heavy lifting, if not all of it. So, you know, they're going to want to know, do you have a social media presence? Do you have a website? You know, are you willing to go to conferences? You know, lots of different things like that. So I think it's just preparing people for the reality that, you know, once that first book is out, like you can take 10 years to write your first book and you have that luxury. But once that's out, unless you want to be a one book author, you got to, you know, now all of a sudden you've probably only got like 6 months to a year to write your book. Right. And then it's like that, sort of like a bit of a treadmill, right? Like some of the, like some authors like Linwood, Barclay, he's writing 2 books a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it depends, yeah, on your publisher. How do you select a publisher? And I say this because there is a difference. And I find that nowadays I'm finding a lot of the smaller, more independent publishers have a real lack of knowledge in what they're doing. And I'm surprised that people get into that business and they really don't know anything about it. Like they're learning as they go. And so if you're a new person getting your book published, I don't always think that's the best way to go.
Well, so one of the sections in my book is on independent publishers, and I break them down into categories. So I have the micro, the small, the medium, and the large. Right. So the micro would be basically my, like Superior Shores Press is my imprint. It would be a micro imprint. I'm basically just publishing myself, and I do an anthology. I've done 3 multi-author anthologies, and I have another one planned for 2024. So, but I'm not publishing any other authors beyond that, those multi-author anthologies. Right. So that's what I would call a micro press. Basically, it's a one person band. And whether by death or desire, if I stop being part of it, that's the end of the press, right? There is no more Superior Shores Press because it's me. So that's micro. And then there's small. So small is just like one step up from micro, which is, okay, I'm a micro today. And I decide, you know what, maybe I want to branch out a little bit right now. I don't. So don't please anybody out there. I'm not interested. But anyway, just say I.
Yeah, everyone send her an email.
Send me an email. But anyway, just say I wanted to expand. Then I might take on maybe 5 or 6, maybe 10 authors, but maybe I'd start small, 5. And I would just take on just those 5 authors, and that would be, now I'm small, a small press, right? So I'd probably be farming out the, I do the editing myself, but I'd probably farm out the cover art and, you know, whatever, maybe I would do the layout, but still, you're still basically a one person band. Maybe it's a 2-person band, but you definitely don't have like a lot of paid staff. Might be a husband and wife deal, something like that, right? So, and then the medium has, it goes up one step above that. So now you've got, you know, many more authors. And now you've maybe got a bit of a staff, right? So you might have an intern looking at submissions. You might have somebody doing the accounting work now. So you've got 2 or 3 employees, say. And then the final, the large independent would be like a Dundurn, which is probably the closest you're going to get to one of the big 5, right? You're not quite big 5, but you're close, right? So, you know, again, the layers, right? So I agree with you. Both the presses that I was with, I would have considered to be medium presses, and yet they both folded. So there you go, right? Because what happened?
Well, there's also a lack of knowledge.
There's like a lack of knowledge.
There was a publisher I was talking to that has maybe 20 authors on his label. And I know that he was talking about something, and I said, well, have you published in, are you in through Ingram Sparks? And he goes, no, what's that?
Oh, my.
And I thought, wow, you don't even know what that is. Of course, I'm not going to say that.
No.
And I'm not going to say his name or who he is or what company he is. But that scares me just for the fact that, yeah. Okay, he's got, you know, 10, 20 authors that are basically working for him in his label, and he doesn't even know. Yeah. That.
Well,
that's what I mean.
And you're absolutely right. And again, I do go into that, the print on demand, the Ingram Spark, Drafted Digital also does it now, and are kind of making a bit of a name for themselves in that way. But I do talk about, like, I do list those publishers. I talk about how that process works. And again, yeah, like I would say, you know, it depends, right? Like, for instance, most people, the dream is to get an, you know, New York City agent and, you know, get the big publishing contract and, you know, be in chapters. That's what most people's dream is. The reality is that most people aren't going to achieve that dream, even if their book is really, really good, because there's just only so many slots, right? So then your other options are, you can go hybrid, which is, you know, like a Friesen type of thing, where they, you know, they do everything and you pay them to do everything, right? So you're independently published, but you're paying them to do all the heavy lifting, basically. It can be really expensive. I think it starts at around $3,000 and goes from there. So that, you know, that's...
That feels kind of cheesy, but...
Yeah, you know, but some people, that's what they feel is right for them. So not everybody, you know, so some people just like, you know, I want to self-publish, but I don't want to learn how to do all the things that you have to do, because there's a lot to it, right? So they hire these hybrid publishers. You have to be careful, because there are some vanity presses that are just, you know, they're not very honest, I guess, for lack of a better word. So you do have to be careful. But there are some reputable ones which will do the work, but it is expensive. Like, you pay them for everything, like everything.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So again, it's, I think the base price is $3,000, but I would suspect that in most cases you're spending $5,000 to $7,000 to have your book published by a hybrid press. So I do cover that also in the book, because some people, that's what they want to do. So, you know, if they've got the money and that's what they want to do, that's their choice, right?
I feel that's kind of whenever I see it, if I get approached by someone on one of those presses, I almost never put them on the show. Am I bad?
No, I mean,
I always think of it as vanity.
Well, you're right. There are vanity presses. There absolutely are vanity presses. But a good hybrid publisher will have, there's criteria that's actually published. I have it in my book, but they'll tell you the things to watch out for, the things that the must haves on the list. And one of those must haves is that they don't accept every single book that is given to them. Okay. So that is sort of the key. So if you go to a publisher with the worst Druck in the world and you know it's Druck and they take it, they're probably, you know, they're definitely a vanity press. But a good hybrid publisher will say, we can't publish it as it is. You're going to have, you know, professional editing. And of course, they're going to charge you for that. And so, you know, maybe you should get that done first and then see. But anyway, a good hybrid, authentic hybrid publisher will only publish things that they've vetted that they feel are worthy, so to speak. And there are some legitimate ones. Again, it's just really, really expensive to go that route. And you know, that's some people feel that that's the way they want to go. Right. As far as a small press goes, what happens is there's still a stigma against self-publishing in a lot of circles. Like certain awards won't accept self-published books. Malus Domestic, the Agatha Awards, they won't accept self-published books. So for some people, they want that option, that that chance of recognition. And so they know they've lost the dream of the Big Five. They don't have $7,000 to spend on hybrid. They don't want to self-publish because they don't want the stigma. Their only option is going to be an independent publisher, right? And so they'll start with the Dunderns, and then they'll get rejected from there, and they'll go to the next. And then before you know it, they're with the smallest of the small who don't know how to do anything. And you're right, like I have author friends, like when I was at Crime Writers of Canada on the board, I met authors who had contracts, and you know, they ended up having to pay for their own cover art. Well, that's just ridiculous, right? I mean, what's the point of having a publisher if you got to pay for your own cover art? But they did, they didn't realize, again, they didn't realize what they should be looking for. And that's another part of why I think the book is important, is because it tells you, okay, if you're going to go with a small press, these are the things you need to look for, and these are the things you've got to avoid, like the plague, right? And so it just puts it into really honest terms. And a lot of it, again, I learned myself the hard way. You know, I didn't have anybody telling me, Judy, watch out for this and that. I just, you know, I just sort of blindly went where I thought I could go. And there were definitely mistakes made. But, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You end up sleeping with people you shouldn't. Or
approaching people and them laughing at you. Aha, you've got to be kidding. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just part of the, I guess, with anything, you know, but it hurts people's pride, you know. So what is the biggest mistake people make when they publish a book?
I would say whether it's searching for an agent or self-publishing, it's putting your book out there before it's ready, right? You've given yourself a deadline, okay? I'm retiring at 55, and I'm going to write a book, and it's going to be published when I'm 56, right? And, you know, so you, guess what, at the end of the year, it's not ready, but you think it's ready, or you don't get it critiqued, you don't get professional editing. I always say that to people, like, you know, say, well, why should I get professional editing if I'm going to go to a publisher, and they're going to pay for editing? Why should I have to pay for editing? And I always say to them, because they get so many submissions, and yours has got to stand out. So you only get one kick at the can. Like, if they turn you down, that's it. You're done, right? You can't go back to them and say, oh, sorry, I've got a better version now. It's too late. You've lost that chance, that opportunity. So, I would say, like, pay for professional editing. I mean, I'm an editor myself, but I pay others to, like, this book, I pay two editors. And a beta reader. I paid one of my beta readers because I value that professional editing. I think it's important that that you have that. And I always sort of say to people, you can take all kinds of, you know, writing courses and try to improve your craft that way. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you hire a professional editor, they're going to help you hone your book and the way you write, and you can learn from it. So treat it like an education. It's like a bit of a university degree, you know, a bit of a college education. And for, you know, you don't have to leave your home. It's even better.
Well, what type of editing does a writer need? Because there are many different types.
There are very many different types, and it really depends on the writer. So, and I do go through that. I do discuss the types of editing in the book as well. So there's developmental editing. So if you're, you know, you're still sort of trying to figure out basic overarching, you know, view of what should happen or transpire or that kind of thing. That's one. Then you could have like copy editing, where they're just looking for sentence structure, that sort of thing, right? So there's different types depending on where you are. So I would say when I was early on writing, like probably when I started writing my first book, I started writing it in 2013, I hired a developmental editor because I had a good instinct for what the book should be, but I didn't really understand story structure or any of that yet, right? I mean, that's something you learn as you go. Like now I, you know, it's almost second nature. Like, you know, not to say that it's formulaic, but you know, okay, this is, you know, I've got to have this sort of beginning, middle, end. This is what I got to do to get there. Like in the beginning, when you're just learning, you're just kind of spewing out all kinds of ideas and hoping something sticks. So I think early writers can really benefit from a developmental editor because they, you know, they're still learning a lot. Once you're further along, like which I like to think I am, my editor is more looking for, things that I, you know, again, things that I think are obvious that they're going to be able to say, no, it's obvious to you, but it might not be obvious to somebody else. So they're looking for that, or they're sort of saying, you know, I think like with my last novel before there were skeletons, my editor said, you know, I would recommend moving your chapter 3 to chapter 1 and because the story will flow better. And I was like, that's crazy. But then when I actually did what she said, because it was just a recommendation. I mean, a good editor will not edit, like not say, will not rewrite your work. They're just going to give you suggestions. You can take them or leave them, right? So, but when I did that, I was like, you know what? She's right. It is better. Like it, because I eliminated some backstory, you know, like I have a bad habit of kind of starting with a bit too much backstory. And a lot of authors make that mistake, but she kind of pulls me away from that. Goes, oh, bad girl, too much backstory, you know, and gets me back on. So it really depends where you are in your writing life, as far as the type of editing. And then I always think it's important to have a proofreader, because honestly, even after, you know, so many reads and whatever, you will find, somebody will still find things, you know, they'll still find those things that slip through because you read them so many times, right? Like it just becomes your vision actually just sort of skips over those mistakes after a while. So I always think it's important to hire a proofreader. So I say, if you're going to self-publish or independently publish yourself, you know, there is going to be expenses of hiring editor and proofreader. And, you know, unless you're really talented cover artist, I always hire a cover artist because I'm not artistically inclined. I mean, I doodle some scratches on a paper and send it to my guy and say, this is sort of what's in my head. And then he does wonderful things to make it happen, but I would not be able to do that. Right. So, I mean, I kind of have in my head what I want, but I don't know how to achieve it. It's just, I don't have that, that artistic, ability. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think probably a big misconception is that, oh, it's anybody can self-publish. It's easy to do. Yeah. I guess you could just flip your book onto Amazon and, you know, not have it edited and just use one of their covers or whatever. But, you know, I mean, you know, are you going to sell any books? And then people say, well, I get 100% of, you know, I get 100% of the royalties. Yeah. But you know, 100% of nothing is still nothing. Right.
So. Right. Yeah. Well, exactly. Well, I've sold one book, so I got $2.
Exactly. So, you know, I think sometimes people, I know when I taught this course in Barrie, Ontario, and the one guy, he'd written a book on training horses. I guess that's what he was, a horse trainer. And he'd done all kinds of work on it and everything. And then I said, well, you're going to hire an editor. And he goes, oh, no. He goes, like, but isn't that expensive? And I said, well, you know, it could be like $1,000, could be more. But, and he goes, well, I'm not going to pay that. And I said, well, like they have families too, right? They have houses to pay for, heat, hydro, whatever, right? Like they've been educated to do this. It's a job. Like you can't expect them to do it for nothing. But, you know, I mean, it's funny, eh? Like people don't necessarily place a value on it. And yet I think it's one of the most important parts of making sure that what you put out there is good.
Yeah. Even editors need love too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, it's the whole business is kind of crazy. Do you like the business the way it is right now? Do you think it's a good thing to get into for people?
I, I think it is, if you're realistic, like I keep hammering that home, and throughout the whole book, I hammer that manage your expectations. If you manage your expectations, like to me personally, I wake up every day so grateful that this is what I do for a living. And I'm very lucky that I actually can earn a modest living. And I do stress modest. I'm not buying a chateau in France anytime soon. And I couldn't afford to live in BC.
Yeah, bring cash.
but I, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones that I earn a modest living from it, but not everybody does that. But I love it. Like I can't imagine, you know, I've had other jobs and haven't liked them very well. I've had other jobs that have paid much more, but never made me nearly as happy. So
Tim Hortons.
Yeah, never did work at Tim's. I did get fired as a waitress once, but that was a long time ago. Yeah, it was like I had only one day on the job and they fired me. but I was a credit manager for years, you know, like I worked, for an insurance company, large insurance company. And then I worked for glass manufacturing company. And then I worked for a high-end office manufacturing company as, you know, and credit and collections and, forecasts and sales things. And yeah, I did all of that. So, you know, real corporate stuff. And, you know, I did really well. I made a lot of money, but I never liked it. But, you know, I just finally one day said, I'm not going to do it anymore. I don't care about the money. And that's when I went and started doing the freelance journalism. And that worked out really well. And then started writing books. And that's been working out. So, but I maybe coming from a business background, I treat it like a business, and I think you have to. Like, as much as I love the creative process, making stuff up or, you know, researching, I love that part. I never forget that it's a business.
Well, if you want to make money, you have to do it that way.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. I know when I was a stripper, I didn't, and I blew all my money. and now I'm too old to strip, so I have to rely on writing. So I have to treat it like a business.
You do, absolutely. And I don't think people realize that. They think it's glamorous. You know, people go, oh, that must be so glamorous. And I'm like, it's not glamorous at all. Like, I mean, you're by yourself in your room, you know, making stuff up for 6, 7, 8 hours a day. It's not glamorous, right? It's hard work. It's hard work. And sometimes you can... You know, some days it's great. Some days you can sit down and, you know, within an hour you've got, you know, 1,000 words written and you're like, ah, oh, this is great. And other days you can be like, you know, take a comma out, put a comma in, take a comma out, put a comma yep. in, right? And at the end of the day, you know, maybe you start it with, you know, 1,500 words and you're down to like 1,200 because you lost 300 because you realized that 300 was just a bunch of padding just to, you know, the day before you thought you were brilliant. And now you realize, yeah, maybe not so much. So, yeah. So I don't think people realize how much work it is or how challenging it can be. But on the other hand, I think it's a wonderful way to spend your life. Right? I mean, I feel really, really fortunate to have the ability to do it.
Yeah, and you know, the new world with Amazon, I guess really anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can do it and treat it like I think I think part of the problem with making it too easy, i.e. it just sort of whipping your book out there and who cares, is that you're not treating it like a business, right? You're just treating it as like a hobby or such as something like sort of an ego booster or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's ego for the most part. It's something they can post. You know, you see people that, you know, they write a 40-page book and they put it, you know, it's some sort of book on a mystery, but they put it under, you know, the some basket weaving category in Amazon, and they post, look, number one new release.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and it's, you know. It's ego.
Yeah, part of it is. I think part of it is. And then part of it is just like you can't imagine wanting to do anything else, right? I mean, I think there are people that are just, that's, you know, they have to write. That's what's in their DNA kind of thing, right? And so I sort of put myself in that category, because even, you know, when I was, you know, doing the whole corporate stuff, I was always writing something. Not that I never sent it anywhere, did anything with it, but I was always, you know, like from the time I was a kid, I was always making up stories and writing stories. I mean, that's who I am. Right? I can't imagine not doing that.
You're writing bad things about your bosses.
I've been known to do that on a time, on occasion. Yeah. Yeah.
So I see this is guidebook one. So what's the deal here? What are you going to do more in the series?
Yeah,
here?
So it's going to be two in the series. So I'm actually about 3/4 of the way through. The second book will come out this fall. It's on self-publishing. So it's really, finding your path to publication goes through five types of publishing. So it goes through big five, independent publishers, self-publishing, hybrid, and social publishing like Wattpad, Inkit, that kind of thing. And so it's sort of an overview of each one of those, and plus, you know, some business basics and editing, the types of editing and understanding royalties, goes through all of that. The self-publishing book, it drills it down further. So it's going to say, okay, you know, it'll explain Ingram Spark in more detail, Draft to Digital in more detail, Kobo in more detail. So it goes into all that in more detail. It goes into advertising and promotion in a lot more detail, because as a self-published author, it's all on you, 100% on you, right? So I touch on advertising and promotion in Finding Your Path, because it is definitely part of the life. But in the self-publishing book, it's a much bigger hunk, because it's much more important that you get that right. It's just going to be a little bit much more detailed. So Finding Your Path is around 40,000 words, and I think the self-publishing is going to land at around 50,000. So it'll be even, you know, it'll be really an in-depth look, where if you want to self-publish, if you buy that book, you can basically follow it, and it will and if you follow the steps, you'll be able to set up your book in all these different places, and you'll be able to, you know, understand how to market it and how to go about doing the various steps. So it really is almost like a hand holding in a way, whereas the Finding Your Path is more of, here's what you can expect from these different paths, but it doesn't get into the hand holding part. It doesn't even make recommendations. It says, here's what you can expect. You decide what's right for you, right? Whereas self-publishing, I'm assuming that that's the route you want to go. And so I'm going to tell you what you need to do to do it and make it as easy as possible for you. And I think that will be important, because there's an author, Brenda Chapman, and she has written several books, but she was with Dundurn and decided to self-publish. And so with her first book, which came out last year, Blind Date, she asked me if I would help her with the process. And I honestly was shocked at how much she didn't understand, because I guess I learned it along the way, but I'm also the sort of person that if I don't know something, I don't ask somebody else. I try to figure it out myself, research it until I get the answer. You know, that's who I am. And I think that comes from the journalism, right? Like, you just have to, you need to figure something out. You know, you gotta dig until you get the answer, right? Where she was more like, I don't understand this. What do I do now? And I think more people are like her than me, right? So, I think the self-publishing book will be, again, it's keeping it real. Like, I mean, I'm going to make sure that people understand the statistics of what your odds are of earning back your investments in editing and cover art and formatting, if you don't do your own formatting and that sort of thing. And I go into options of how you can do your own formatting and all of that. So we'll see. I'm working with Emily on it, and it's going really well. So I figure I actually will have it, the first draft complete by May 1st. But from the first draft, then of course I have to read it. It's not really like a first draft of a fiction novel, because these are all facts. So, and it's already kind of gone through the editing, because every week I send her something, she sends it back with notes, and then I sort of go through the next version of it, right? And some cases I've sent it back, a section back to her like four times. So it's had like four drafts kind of thing, right? So it's not really a first draft. It's at least a second draft, but even in some cases a third. But still it needs to, you know, go through it again, and I'll get, you know, a couple beta readers to go through it and tell me what they think. And then I'll get my other editor in on it to look at it, and et cetera. So, you know, it's a bit of a process. So I don't have a firm date. I'm not just going to say it's going to be September 1, because it might not be ready September 1. It might be November 1, right? It'll be, I'm hoping.
Well, I can't wait. I need to know. How am I going to get my book published?
Yeah, well, you're going to find out, right? So hopefully, that it's coming along, and it's again, even though it's a path that I've taken, I've learned a lot in the writing of it, because, as you're digging, right, you start realizing, oh, I didn't even know that myself, right? I mean, I thought I was pretty knew mostly everything about it, but I've kind of realized, oh, there's a couple things here that I didn't really realize, or I could have done better. So it's been a bit of a process for me as well. But anyway, it's keeping me out of trouble, which is, I guess, the main thing.
That's no fun. So now, do you have a website? Like, where do people find, where do they find Judy? Like, where's Judy lurking?
So I'm at judypenshelleck.com. So that should be easy to find. And the Finding Your Path to Publication is available in digital, so ebook, trade paperback, hardcover, and large print. And I am looking into the audiobook version, but that will take some time because I have to find a narrator and all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and trade paperback. Ooh.
Trade paperback. So the trade paperback is 6x9 is the standard size. Unlike those little small, you know, pocket paperbacks that are, you know, the writing's like so small, you can't read it. So there's lots of versions, and I thought hardcover. I haven't done any of my other books in hardcover, but I thought this would be a good one because I could see it work well in libraries, and they like hardcover books, right? Just by virtue of the fact that they stand up a bit better than paper over time, right? So I thought I would try the hardcover and see. It's like the case laminate. It's not like doesn't have a dust cover or any of that stuff. But anyway, so I'm optimistic, and I hope it helps. It helps people. That's all. You know, that's the main goal. I mean, it would be great if it sold like a million copies.
Yeah, then you'd be a millionaire.
Then I'd be a millionaire. But I'm not convinced that this type of book is the type of book that's going to become, you know, a million seller. But I do think it's a good book, and I think it was worth my time too.
You should have had a chapter on sex in it, and then it would sell a million, right? The R-rated.
Well, you know, version. One thing, one fact that I did learn in this was that, a book that was self-published was originally Fifty Shades of Grey. And it sold so well that a big five grabbed it up, right? So it can happen. And another book that that was self-published that made it big was Still Alice by Lisa Genova. It's a phenomenal book. It's older now. They made it into a movie with Julianne Moore. She was really good in that role. But anyway, I didn't realize that those books had started off. So, you know, one question might be, if I self-publish, will I ever, you know, will I ever get picked up by a big five? Well, chances are not so great, but here are two examples where it happened, right? So I guess I try to put examples in there to show people this is what can happen, but realistically it's not likely to happen. Doesn't mean it will not happen, right? So.
Right. Well, yeah, look at me. Well, it's been a pleasure. So the book, of course, is Finding Your Path to Publication. It's a step-by-step guide.
Yes.
Book one, Judy Penn Sherlock. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Al. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Judy.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.